And Gordon Nuttall and I are facilitating the meeting, but it is the meeting that was called by the ad hoc committee to explore the possibility of purchasing the golf course. And from that committee are John Green, former chairman of the golf course committee, and Joanne Koss, who is a member of the board and the vice president. And Donna Wood from Pinehurst is with us also. So thank you all for joining us, and I'm going to ask Joanne and John to take it from here.
Great, thank you. And welcome, everybody. I'm so happy to know we have a great crowd here this evening. I'd like to thank you all for your participation. Last week, we sent out a position paper from the ad hoc committee on the reasons that we believe we should purchase the golf course and to give you a little insight as to the recommendation we would be heading towards making to the board. We were reacting partly, as you'll recall, to the fact that a third party potential purchaser had signed and had an executed letter of intent with the now owner Ramson. And you know, we do have the right of first refusal. There are time frames associated with all of these things. And we either had to try to meet that if we thought it was reasonable, or counter offer, and we had again time frames to work within. I think you should all know by now that that potential buyer has gone to the wayside, and in some ways then that has definitely lessened or at least made our time frames a little bit more flexible than they were before. And that's a good thing, I think, for all of us, because it really is our intent to be able to get to as many people as we can, to explain the rationale, to answer questions, to get your feedback, and to get a better understanding of what it is that you would like to do. So again, a good thing for all of us. What probably hasn't changed and will not change is really the motivation of Ramson. That organization, the investment company that currently owns the golf club, has no intention of running that golf course and has made it very clear on many occasions to us that if we do not purchase that course by the end of the lease, and there aren't any other potential buyers, he will close the course. And we are then up against the same issues that we've always been up against. And that is basically, how do we get a hold of our own destiny and protect our homeowner values? Now, there are many of you out there that have told us that you believe that we should buy this property if we want to control home values. It's the only way we really can do that, and are very much in favor. There are also a number of you that have disclosed to us that you really don't care if the golf course is closed and are willing to risk losing home values because you never intend to sell your home anyway. And certainly, that's a valid opinion. Everybody has a valid viewpoint depending on what your personal circumstances are. So there are a number who have let us know that that is what their position is. There are others who would like to wait out the lease and decide then. Of course, the decisions will be exactly as they are today. If no other, again, no other buyer emerges, and we don't buy and act in a rapid manner at that point in time, he will sell, they will sell the course. There are still others who want to examine alternate uses for the property, and we welcome that analysis as well. There is nothing to say that Arizona National needs to stay a golf course in perpetuity as long as something else that is proposed will maintain home values. But in some ways, these points are moot because you really can't talk about alternative options if you don't own the property. So we would like you to think of this in kind of a stair-step approach. Without ownership, you don't control your destiny, and you can talk and dream and come up with a number of potentially pie in the sky alternative uses, but you can't act on any of them if the property is not yours. So one thing the ad hoc committee wants to be sure that we cover again this evening, and I think we've done this more than once, is what the primary intention of this committee was and why this committee was put together to begin with. And that was to recommend the best course of action that will protect and preserve home values. That's what we care about most. I say that because before we go any further, I would like to ask you to be cognizant of some of the things that you are saying and recognize that the people that are working on this are volunteers. They have substantial business background and have run businesses and are CPAs and have run restaurants. And so they do bring something to the table, but they are volunteers. They are giving up their time and attention. So to say that some of you believe that we on the committee have an unquenchable thirst to own a golf course, and that is ultimately what's driving our decision. So why don't we just go out and buy it ourselves, and then we can fulfill our lifelong dream? We think is really unwarranted, unnecessary, and in fact, at times can be somewhat insulting. I'd also like to state that that couldn't be any farther from the truth. We did not create this situation. We are volunteering services to evaluate options, and that's what we've done. And we have been looking at options now for 4 years, and we have studied other golf courses and other HOAs and have gathered experience in our own community with this course. And so all we can tell you is what we have learned. But again, please keep in mind that there are no options within our control or that will keep us in control. That doesn't include buying the property. That's kind of the position we are, but that is not to say that it has to stay a golf course again in perpetuity. We're very open to having people come forward if they wish and develop other alternatives and present them and do the footwork and determine whether or not it will, whatever the alternative is, will preserve our home value. Some of you have also said or asked, is it even legal for us as an HOA to purchase a golf course? And the answer to that is yes. Of course, we do have an attorney that represents us and has and knows the law very well. And it is, yes, very legal. And when we went through the options to pre-negotiate purchase prices when we signed the lease, we covered that. And we do have a document that assures us that this is particular, that is obviously very legal to do this. So what is the issue in terms of buying this course now? Why did we think primarily this was a really good time to do this, other than the fact that we did have a potential buyer? What that potential buyer was for us was kind of a wake-up call, if you will. And I guess bottom line, it comes to the timing right now, and you'll hear more about this, it probably won't be any better than it is today. perhaps for decades, who knows. But borrowing money with interest rates at historic lows are what we are looking at now. We are talking about 4% interest over a 10-year loan. Of course, it is secured by the monthly assessments, no closing costs, and the assessments will stay as they are now. They will stay exactly what you are paying. And you'll learn a little bit more about why we think this is very feasible to do. The assessments will stay as they are now, with maybe $30 a month going towards the actual loan debt and the other 70 towards capital improvement and operations costs. John is, I think some of you need to mute so that we're not all hearing other conversations. Thank you. John can cover this in more detail and intends to when he gives you the presentation on his on the financials. He's going to take us through the first 30 months of the lease. He's going to cover five-year projections this evening with us. It's going to talk about why we are more confident today with these projections than we were at the time we executed the lease. He's going to discuss how we plan to mitigate future capital items. And we'll go through the bank and the financing arrangement in more detail than I have. But please keep in mind as we go through this evening, that there'll be no decision made without the entire community voting. And we want, the vote's going to be, by the way, some of you have asked, managed, collected, and tallied by the organization we have been using, the electronic voting organization we've been using, Vote Now. It's the same electronic voting organization we used when we signed the lease, and that we have used for prior elections when we're going to use for the upcoming election. So I guess without any further ado, we'll turn this over to John and then come back and try to answer, if time allows, any of the chat questions that we are going to ask you to please jot down and send in during the course of all the presentations. If we cannot get, and we most likely won't with 100 people here, to every chat this evening, we will answer the chat in writing and everybody will see what the answer is. I guess when all is said and done, I guess the final question is, whether you believe that there is only one decision that we can make that will allow us to control our destiny. And again, no matter what you want to do with the land, you can decide nothing if you don't own it. So I won't take up any more airtime summarizing, but I'll be back towards the end of the meeting. And I would like to turn it over to John Green at this time.
Good evening, everybody. Before I get to the finance piece of our plan, I just wanted to reiterate some of Joanne's comments, but we've received over 50 emails and other correspondences from you. It's become pretty much overwhelming, but the committee is committed to responding to all the questions and all the comments. We'll put some of the comments probably aside, because this really isn't a good answer for some of them. But I do want to stress that we got a lot of comments saying that this plan is not based on facts. We're starting with the facts tonight. So if you've made a determination that you're not in favor of this alternative, and you're in favor of another alternative, just please have an open mind as we go through this. And we'll try to convey to you the knowledge that we've learned over the past 4 years and the reasons why we think that maintaining the golf course, at least for the foreseeable future, is the best thing that we can do for property values in Sabino Springs. So I'm going to share a screen and I'll keep talking. I want to go through first. That's not what I wanted. Okay, first I want to go through, because there are a number of questions about this. You know, where do we stand since the beginning of the lease and what have we spent our assessments on? This document did go out previously. I've added some data to it. So you can see since the start of the lease, you know, we've experienced with capital, we've put in $1,572,000. We collected $1,688,000 in the special assessments. Of that, $1,350,000 has been transferred to the golf course. As of December 31st, we had $338,000 in the bank. And as of February 28th, we have $431,000 in the bank. A total of $1,450,000 has been used to fund the golf course since we started. That includes $100,000 that the golf course still owes back to the HOA's reserve funds. I'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. And so we've used $481,000 to do capital items and extraordinary repairs, and $968,000 went to operations. The results, the $1,090,000, you know, loss that we've incurred to date is approximately $500,000 more than what the original projections were. I'd be happy to go through that. We've tried to describe this. There were some things that happened early on that really nobody anticipated. The reputation of the course. A big thing that happened was the equipment, which the bankers told us when we took over the lease from Romspan that the equipment had low hours and this would be fine for the term of the lease. Well, that turns out not to be right. So we've also learned a really, really important lesson, and I'm going to touch on this in relation to some of the other comments we got in a little while. In order to have move towards profitability in a golf course, you have to have good conditions. And without the new equipment that we got last year, we wouldn't have the good conditions. So things are really, and I totally understand people are upset that, you know, the projections didn't work out. We had two firms do these projections initially. It just didn't work out the way that we thought. However, I will say this, and there are a lot of talented people on the golf committee. They're holding Indigo accountable. And when you see the projections I'm going to get to right now, they wouldn't be as good if we weren't holding them accountable. We got the February results yesterday. We are 28,000 ahead of budget for the first 2 months, and we're 40,000 ahead of where we were last year. In February of last year, pre-COVID, we were $60,000 ahead of budget. So there is a pathway to this property being profitable or at least break even, where it doesn't cost us any money to operate. So now I'm going to go to the projections. This was also sent out. I'm going to go through why we think these projections are very, very conservative. And I'll start with the top line, member rounds. Now we have annual pass holders. There are about 60 of them or so right now. It's down a little bit from the previous year. These rounds for members in 2020, this is a projection based off 2020, which is the rounds went up for members because of COVID. And so we know that that's not going to continue because, you know, people couldn't travel in the summer. You know, there's really not a whole lot to do. So golf is a great social distancing, activity. And I can tell you for myself, I played more golf in 2020 than I played probably the previous 5 years combined. And that's not going to continue because there's other things I want to do in my life. And I want to get out of here in the summer and go to the mountains or go someplace else. So these member rounds are going to go down. But the good thing is our golf course is at capacity almost every day. Certainly on the busy days of Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, I was out walking my dog on Sunday at 4 o'clock, and there was a father and his daughter getting out of their car to go out and play golf at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That didn't happen under the previous administrations, I can tell you that, because I've been walking this dog and the parking lot was empty by 4 o'clock. So the 7,000 rounds will probably go down to more like 5,500, and they'll be replaced with public rounds. And the good news is the public rounds, we will make more money. So going through 2021, you know, the EBITDAR, which I'll explain, is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, and in Indigo's lingo, rent as well. We don't have rent. We don't pay rent. But this is a measure of what an investor would look at to what's my return on my investment. So obviously we see we're going to lose money in 2021, 172,000 expected EBITDA loss. Then it goes down to 115. Then it goes down to 83. But when we get to 2025, you know, we're down to, and again, these are very conservative projections. We're not wearing rose colored glasses here. We've beat up Indigo about this a lot. We think we could approach either in 2024 or 2025 close to break even. Another big factor is the food and beverage revenue is being projected based on the COVID year. So nothing is in there for any kind of demand for parties, weddings, celebrations of life, anniversaries, people just getting together, banquets, all of the HOA events that maybe we'll be fortunate enough to have, you know, the fall fling and the Oktoberfest and a Christmas party this year. Maybe we'll be able to do that, but none of that revenue is in there. So we think that going forward, there is a pathway to break even or profitability. And we're using real data. I mean, the data we got from Romspan, and I mean, frankly, we never got complete data for 2018. So, I mean, we really had nothing to compare it to because they stopped doing the accounting. So we were kind of handy, you know, the consultants that we hired, and if you remember, we got criticized for hiring a consultant in the first place, but the consultants that we hired, they did the projections, they did them to the based on the best knowledge and assumptions at the time. And now we're doing projections based on 2.5 years actually operating this course and 2.5 years of questioning why are we spending money there instead of here, and 2.5 years of questioning how come we can't raise the rates and how come we can't get more golfers. And if you go on Golf Now, which I did yesterday, the rates for this weekend prime time are $81. That's the highest it's been. I mean, the first time I came to this course in 2001, it was 85. So we're approaching, you know, where they were when the course was the Raven. And I think that, you know, it's just the result of picking a good management company. I wasn't going to talk about this now, but, you know, being part of Troon is also going to offer a lot of benefits to both golfers and non-golfers in this community. They're the largest owner operator of golf courses in the world. They operate over and manage over 700. We get volume discounts from them. So we picked a good partner. It worked out pretty well. And then, you know, good people have been on the committee, myself excluded, who have really worked hard to make sure that we hold them accountable, and the board as well, who's held us accountable. Now, capital, the one thing that, and I have to give kudos to Dennis Bishop for really pushing this forward of having a long-term capital plan. So the numbers here, I know people are going to be like, oh my God, how can we be spending this much money? We're not going to be able to spend $243,000 in 2021. We don't have the money. This has been a catch up from day one of trying to, you know, make sure that we had enough money for operations and only target the capital items. So this is more of what I would say is approaching a wish list of what Indigo came back to us and said, if you, these are the things that you really should do in the property long term. And that's why we're going to need to keep the assessment as it is for now, because we are going to need to fund some of these capital items. The one thing that is going to have to be done and this is really important. We've talked and pressed before we did these projections, what about the irrigation system? And what we got back from Indigo is, at the moment, the irrigation system is operating as efficient as it can possibly be operating. There's no major failures. There's no indication of any major failures. And when you get to the point that you start to have major failures, that's the point where we have to start making plans about the irrigation system. We're a long way off from that because included in the 211,000, I'll say, which is right down here, and all the years running out to 2025, we're going to put $50,000 into the irrigation system for the purposes of extending its life and upgrading systems. Those will be compatible with whatever irrigation system has to be down the line. And my guess is a lot of us may not be here, you know, when that has to happen if we continue to maintain the system. So that was a question that did come up, and I wanted to address it in that fashion so that you understand, you know, that we are trying to oversee and manage Indigo in an efficient way to benefit everybody. So I'm going to stop sharing now and move on to, the term sheet from the bank. So I'm going to go through this. This is a question that was asked by a number of people. What are we going up against? So we bank with Alliance Bank. I had spoken to a number of representatives back in the spring last year, trying to get a PPP loan, only to find out that, you know, 501c4, which we are, organizations didn't qualify. Although some golf courses and HOAs did get PPP, Alliance wasn't willing to do it. But in any event, I called up Alliance. They got back to me right away. And the term sheet that we have is a 10-year self-amortizing note at 4% interest. It can be prepaid at any time, except if we decide to refinance, there's a 2.5% prepayment penalty. It's secured, as Joanne mentioned, by the assessments being collected by the HOA, no closing costs. The assessments need to stay in place for the time being. The bank would have to approve any decreases in assessments, and I'll get back to that in a second. There is a debt service coverage ratio, that if you're into finance, if you're not into finance, this might be Greek, but 1.15 to 1 net income plus taxes, plus interest, plus reserve contributions, plus non-recurring expenditures divided by interest and long-term debt. We're going to meet that comfortably from my initial calculations. We can lock in the rate with a $1,000 deposit. The terms are good till April 15th, but it's subject to underwriting. So there's a lot of hoops that we have to jump through. We're going to have to get our accountant to do a reviewed financial statement for the bank. Fortunately, I can help with that. So the cost shouldn't be too great. And we're going to have to file annual reviewed financial statements with the bank as long as the note is outstanding. We also contacted another bank that Pinehurst recommended us to. I haven't heard back from them. There is a resident who has sent along some local contacts. We'll do our due diligence. We'll make sure that we get the best rate possible. But to echo Joanne's comments, this is the lowest interest rate environment since the early 60s. Prime rate has been 3.25% for several years. It's doubtful in my mind that we're going to get financing any more attractive, especially because we don't have to go and put a mortgage on the property, which would entail a whole lot more paperwork. There's no closing cost. I mean, there are some hoops we have to jump through, but it's not nearly as difficult as it would be with some other institutions because Alliance is trying to be competitive and trying, and they have a niche in the HOA market. So they know HOAs, and that's why they're willing to make the loan. Now, I know there'll probably be a lot of questions about this, and I'm happy to address those in any fashion that makes sense. And if people need a little bit additional explanation, that's fine. We can you know, we can address those. So the next portion here that I want to talk about. So we had a question that came in, and I want to read the question because I think it sums up a lot of the feelings of some of the people that communicated with us. And I want to go into it in a very professional and very tactful way, because it is a pretty direct question.
Come on.
How does purchasing the golf course benefit people like me who plan to stay until they die and don't really care about property values and golf course ownership? And I thought long and hard about this. There have been some comments that we're not considering our neighbors who are on fixed income, that it's unfair to them. So I want to address this question in two parts. One is we care about property values for everybody. So whether you're on fixed income and your house is a good portion of your net worth, or whether you just bought in a community at a high in the market, or whether you took a big mortgage and you were upside down on the mortgage a couple years ago and now you have a little bit of life, a little bit more equity than you had, it's an HOA. We all share the benefits and we all share the costs. That's the way HOAs work. If you're on a fixed income and you plan to die in your home, well, I was thinking of this expression, you know, we plan and God laughs, right? So you really don't know when you're going to need your home equity. A good percentage of us, if statistics hold true, are going to deal with dementia, Alzheimer's. If you have a chronic health issue, you know, you might need assisted living. You might need to be in rehab for a while. You know, people die, people get divorced, people get transferred to other cities on a moment's notice. For me, you know, personally, I care about all my neighbors. I mean, I was heartbroken when one of my neighbors a few years ago had to sell her house on a short sale, you know, so she lost all her equity and she got her credit was ruined, you know, and that was at the time when, you know, this place was a dust bowl and, you know, we weren't sure what was going to happen. And, you know, that was not a pleasant experience for her. You know, I care about the family that, you know, it's very encouraging, by the way, the school buses in the neighborhood, which I've never seen in the 15 years that I've owned a home here. But I pulled in this afternoon, it's a school bus where the young girl is in a wheelchair and that family just bought. I don't want to see their equity go down the toilet because we made a snap decision and said, like, okay, we're not gonna pursue this anymore. So I just want to say the committee is this is the primary focus, is protecting property values. And I understand if the $1,200 a month is something you weren't expecting, but if you go back and look, and we're not making this up, property values increased 10 to 15% in the community before COVID. You know, and I was very happy. One of the homes right in my neighborhood sold for almost what I bought for in 2005. So I was very happy to see that, you know, home values were appreciating finally. And we can't quantify how much the golf course, you know, how much of it is based on the golf course. It's a portion. But I can tell you this, from every community that I've spoken to, and every community that I've seen, and I'm going to refer, we'll send this out, but there's a communityassociations.net where you can get the blog of what's going on in HOAs. And they have a whole, there's every other one of them is a golf course issue, you know, where they're afraid of development, the golf course closed, they're trying to buy the course, they're trying to find another, but this, we're not unique, you know. So I wanted to answer that. The first part of that question is, you know, we care about everyone's home equity, and to think that if, you know, somehow that Sabino Springs is immune to the laws of real estate economics, and if we close the golf course, we're not going to have any impact. I don't think that's a fair assessment either. The second part of the question is, you know, I would just say this. If you don't care about your own equity in your home, you certainly don't care about your neighbors. And I'll just go back. We're an HOA. I mean, this is a great, you know, my wife Sue and I found this place. It's a great little community. We made some friends. I've made a lot more friends in the past 4 years. working this. It's a great community. We take care of ourselves. Our neighbors look at our house when we're gone. We look at their house when they're gone. It's a safe community. It's a vibrant community now that the golf course is open. We have an on-premises restaurant. We have other facilities that people are taking advantage of in COVID. It's a great community. If you're not, I always go by the golden rule, right? Do as others as would be done to you. If you don't care about your own equity, I think that's fine. But if you live in an HOA, you don't care about the property value of the community, then I guess my question is, why do you live in an HOA? Because one of the primary reasons for having an HOA is standards and property values and
Monica.
And if you go around and walk out, in the neighborhoods, which I used to run before my hip got bad, but you walk in the neighborhoods, you walk down the street.
George just has a picture, whoever he is. Jerry Carbonari is here.
There's someone has to mute. I think Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, could you mute, please? Okay, thank you. I love this community and it's maintained very well. The board has done a great job maintaining the community. The streets are better than the streets you see in other in the communities outside the wall. I say outside the compound. But you walk around some of the communities, you see, an RV, a boat, a trailer, and a shed on the front yard. I mean, we don't have that, right? So if you don't appreciate the benefits of an HOA, I mean, I don't mean to be insulting, but honestly, I'm really thinking about starting a golf course consulting business because I'm getting called for it, getting called all the time anyway. But I did get a master's in psychology a couple of years ago, and I don't know, I might do some research on HOAs because it's just as amazing to me. And I was a co-president of an HOA in New York for 8 years and went through, same sorts of issues there with, life is too short. I mean, if you don't like living in Sabino Springs and you think that this is a burden, I don't know what to say. But the vote the last time was 465 or so people voted, 370 some odd voted in favor. We didn't threaten and intimidate and force 370 people to vote. I trust me, there's some very strong-willed people in this community. We did not force people to vote positive, and we're certainly not trying to force any issue here at all. And so with that, I'll get off my soapbox for a minute, and I want to go over some of the alternatives that people have proposed. One is alternative financing. Maybe we should float a private placement memorandum. Maybe we should find a consortium of residents to put up the money to buy the place. And another resident wrote in, maybe we should allow residents to prepay the assessments so that their ongoing assessment on their house would be reduced. I mean, I think all have some merit in some way, shape, or form. But we're kind of, our plate is pretty full. So if there are people in the community that want to pursue that or those kind of alternative financing, I think, go for it, and if you want to call and I'll give you some advice, that's fine. But I don't have the bandwidth to do a lot of work on that. I will say this, and I'm going to talk about it in more detail in the next thing, and then I'll shut up and let Joanne talk for a little while. When you have a private owner of a course like ours, whether it's a consortium of residents or whether it's a wealthy individual or whether it's an outside buyer that comes in, that's a golf course operator, they want a return. And the going rate for standard return in the golf business is somewhere between 7 on the low side and 14% on the high side. At some point in time, the consortium of residents wants to do something else. And I actually had a conversation with HOA in California where that happened. A consortium of residents bought the golf course. And after a couple of years, they said, this just isn't for us. We're not making a return here, HOA, take the property back. So I'll just say, please, I'm not throwing any cold water on things. I'm just giving you, experience that I've had in the past 4 years in talking to people. If you have an alternative financing plan and you want to put something together, I think that's fine. The next one is kind of curious, pursuing litigation. So I want to put it out there because there's been a lot of confusion of what version of the CCRs is effective and whether or not this golf course under the CCNRs needs to be maintained at a high level or whatever the description was. The CCNRs were amended and restated in 2006. Any of the provisions that had to do with the golf course maintenance were taken out. So if you want to, I'm sure James or Pinehurst can give you the most updated version of our CCNRs. Several people have said, the CCNRs should be updated, and that is a project that will probably fall to the next board if people want to do that. It's an onerous project. So I just want to clarify that. So there's no way that we can use the CCNRs to force Romsman to maintain the golf course. Now, a few of the residents have brought up the Sabino Springs the specific plan. I can never get the three S's out. In the specific plan, I think, and I'm not an attorney, I'm not a land use person, I'm a CPA and accountant. I've read a lot of contracts over time. When I look at that document, I think an argument could be made that this place could only be a golf course. In practical terms, that's a different thing. I mean, if the golf course is owned by the HOA, and several years down the line, the HOA gets together and says, look, like, this is not economic for us, there's probably a way that you could approach Pima County on that. But pursuing litigation, I would just say this, and I actually spoke to a neighbor's brother over the weekend, who's a developer, owns some golf courses, and his suggestion is, sue him. I reminded of Ben Franklin's quote, don't pick fights with people that buy ink by the barrel. And I've amended that to, don't pursue litigation with people that have a lot more money than you and a lot more resources. Romsman has $3 billion under management. They have plenty of money to pursue litigation. And I'm going to talk about that also, because it did come up. I'll just go through these quickly. Pursuing a land trust to donate the land, to have open space. Of course, there's no revenue that comes in from that. And the land would have to be public. Some people want to expand the facilities, including, lap pools, pickleball courts, expand the restaurant. Some people want, food minimums so that the restaurant can operate at a higher level. All these ideas are great. But if you have an idea, someone's got to champion the idea, and the ad hoc committee, it doesn't have the bandwidth to champion all these ideas. So if you have an idea, we're certainly open to exploring the alternatives, and we'd be happy to go through with you. I mean, I will just say this, I did a back of the envelope in 15 minutes calculation, that if we turn the course into a nature trail, it might cost just as much as the $100 a month. Because you still have to buy the course, so that's $30 a month. Just to maintain the lake without evaporating is $100,000. Taxes, property taxes, $60,000. Insurance costs, maintenance costs. I mean, it could be a lot for no revenue. So, but if that's what the community wants, that's fine. If the community would rather pay $100 a month and have a nature trail and no golf, that's going to be subject to a vote. All right. So the last piece that I want to talk about, because we got quite a few. Comments and suggestions and questions about, why is the HOA buying this place, and we're not qualified to run a golf course. Fortunately, we have Indigo to run it for us on a day-to-day basis. So there's over 300, it's probably closer to 500. I couldn't get an exact number because the golf statistical companies, National Golf Foundation, doesn't break it out. There's somewhere between 300 to 500 or more HOAs that own golf courses. So we're not unique in that front at all. Just recently, Dorado, that's not too far away. They have an executive course, they have an HOA. They took over the property from HSL. And they're in the process of figuring out how much it's going to cost them to run the property. HSL was also the owners of El Conquistador, which was sold to Oro Valley several years ago. So, I mean, this is happening. It's happening in Arizona. It's even it's happening in Tucson. We got several residents told us that, why can't we be profitable like 49er is? Joanne's muted right now, but you know, we spoke to people. I mean, Joanne actually spoke to the family. I spoke to a contact. I spoke to a contact on the inside. It's owned by an individual, bought the property in 2012 for $250,000. He had a successful business that he sold and had enough money to do that. He has put well over $3 million into the property since 2012. And they have not been profitable once. So they're at the point where the family is now saying, you know, Dad, it's time. Like, it's time to, you know, end this, what is it, subsidy? it's time to stop the hobby.
It's right? More like, it was more like, honey, enough of your little hobby. Don't do this again.
So, there was a rumor out there a year ago that the gentleman was looking to sell. Whether it was true or not, I don't know, but I can tell you this much. The employees over there got wind of the rumor and they were all concerned. So 49er is not profitable. It's not the be all end all. I don't want to come across in any other way than this. And in fact, Joanne and I played in an outing there recently. I can tell you right now, based on what I learned in the past 4 years, I could improve his operations really quickly. There's a few things that could be done to improve it. I'm not going to do that, but there's some management issues there that could reduce his burden. And I'm just glad that we were able to do some of those things here at Sabino Springs. So the last thing I'm going to say before I turn it back over to Joanne is, and I have to give kudos to Jeff Lurbs, who seems to be able to find information about topics in all sorts of manners that I'm not able to do. So I talk to Peter Olbaum at Romspan fairly frequently. He had called me back in November about a potential letter of intent, and I asked him about, what's going on at Vistoso. So we got some comments, Vistoso is going to be this beautiful walking trail and the residents are all happy and stuff like that. Well, the residents went to the town of Oro Valley because their property values were suffering when the golf course closed in 2018. And they want the town to buy it. The town was approached by, actually, all of the officers of the, they have multiple associations over there. All the officers of the associations now have this preserved Vistoso, like 30 of them. They wouldn't return Romsman's calls back in 2017, but now they want to preserve the place. And with 4,000 homes, they could have crafted a plan that would have cost, a fraction, because we only have 516 homes. They really blew it. So now they want a bailout of some sort. What Peter Olbaum told me, they couldn't come to a price that the land trust wasn't offering enough. And he told me emphatically, he said, what you read in the news is not 100% accurate. And they're not getting their open space till I get paid what I want. So there's a development plan that was presented to the town of Oro Valley. It was pulled in anticipation of this land trust deal. He said, I can wait him out. I'll refile the plan and I'll cash out on the terms that I want. Of note, Oro Valley doesn't have a separate property tax. Most of the revenue from the town of Oro Valley to the use for operations comes from fees and permits. The development plan is literally hundreds of units. either condos or an assisted living facility in the driving range, and you know, basically any space that has access to a public road is going to be developed. The town got 1,100 comments about traffic, water use, all kinds of stuff. So if you've heard that it's wonderful over at Vistoso, just take it with a grain of salt. That there's a long way to go before there's a solution crafted there. And property values have suffered. It's obvious if the residents are going to the town of Ore Valley and complaining in the news, now maybe it's gotten better in the past couple months. It probably has, like every golf course community or every community, basically. It's a strong real estate market, no doubt. I'm going to stop there. I have other stories that I could go into, because there are properties in Phoenix that have Ahwatukee Lakes is another one. There's the Foothills Weston Association that's having an issue, and their property values are definitely suffering. So I'm going to stop there, but please understand our goal as an ad hoc committee is to find a solution that preserves this community and protects home values. And you know, it's going to be a vote of the entire community. And we want to make sure that everyone is educated, that everyone understands the risks of purchasing the property, along with the risks of doing nothing, along with the risks of alternative uses. And we do have time for this. You know, I spoke to Joanne before. I'm going to recommend to the board that we lock in the rate for $1,000. It's a minimal amount, you know, $2 per home. And we can go through this in a logical and not time sensitive way. I've Joanne and I have spoken. I think, you know, once we get past the annual meeting, if people would like to meet on the patio on social distance, I'm amenable to do that. And I'm more than happy to answer questions that relate to the plan. I do want to just follow on a little bit with Joanne's comments. You know, we're volunteers. You know, we're doing this for the benefit of the community. I know people are upset. I know people are angry about the situation. Actually, one more quick thing. You know, I went back. The golf course still pays back to the HOA $33,000 a year. That started in 2014 when Romsman got it cut down. Before that, it was $66,000 a year, which Silverstein had cut down in 2006. Prior to 2006, it was $133,000. If you add it all up, the golf course has paid over $1.5 million into the HOA. That's more than our current reserves. So you could look at it in a way that all of us who've been living here all these years kind of had a free ride to a degree, because the golf course was paying in a significant chunk of money. So it is what it is. This property was set up backwards. There always should have been a subsidy from the beginning. And I could go through that in more detail in our face-to-face meetings. But just understand that, you know, we, like Joanne said, we didn't create this issue. Okay. We're just trying to work out a solution that works for everybody. And if there is a solution that involves something other than golf, that we're open to that, and that's fine. So I thank you for your time. I'm sorry I rambled on a little bit. But okay. I'll send it back to Joanne.
Okay. Thank you. As John said, these communication sessions are less than desirable in terms of logistics. We had the opportunity the last time we did this to host large town hall meetings between 100 and maybe 200 to 300 people in each meeting. We had 30 small group sessions. Up until now, we haven't felt that we could do that. And in fact, we couldn't do that, based on Pima County's rules and regulations. that may open up. Some of it has. We have to examine that a little bit, but we would like to have in-person meetings and are working on a way that we can do that and not be hosting a super spreader event. You know, so we're not all vaccinated. Many of us who are over 70, we're able to get our vaccines in this neighborhood, but there are still youngsters like John Green. He hasn't been able to get both of his yet. He's on the list, but he hasn't gotten this yet. So
April 1st.
So
number two.
So we still have some of that, but we will be working on that because we do have the time now and the flexibility, and we do think this is important, and we do want to have some give and take. If there are chat questions that we can see, Gordon, we might want to take a few tonight, as we do have a little time, recognizing that we will not be able to get to all of them, but we will answer all of them and send the answers out to the community.
We have a lot of entries, and I wanted to make a brief announcement that for people you know, or if you yourselves were not able to get on at first, the 100-person limit, that has been upped during this very meeting. So we are able to accommodate more people now, and I apologize for those who were not able to get on. If you know people, we'll send out a message, of course. I'm trying to contact people as we speak to encourage them to try to get on again. So again, my apologies, and we're going to begin reading those chat questions. I'm just going to take them from the first one and continue on until you tell me to take a break. Sorry, bear with me. I'm multitasking here.
That'd be interesting.
If you are unmuted, please do mute your microphone. Okay, so the first one is, what do you think are viable alternative uses for the property? And this is from someone who's identified themselves as Kim Co. I'm not sure the full name.
We, as John said earlier, haven't spent a lot of time looking at alternate uses for the property because primarily some of the data that we've looked at where there are walking areas and nature trails and that kind of thing. Really, we are not seeing where that brings the home values or protects the home values when a community is established as a golf course community. I know that there's been a lot of discussion as to whether or not this is in fact a golf course community. But it in fact is, and there's no other way to say that. It is not a public course that happens to have some homes around it. It was established as a golf course community. The golf course was here first, and all you have to do is Google the top, as we said in our answer, 10 or 11 golf course communities in Tucson, and Arizona National is mentioned. So the fact that even Pima County designated this as, in their mind, the use of the land has to be a fine golf course in perpetuity, I think tells you that this is considered a golf course community. Now, is that to say that Pima County can't change their mind? Yes, of course, they probably can over time, a lot of money. But in fact, we as a committee have not spent our time doing that because, again, we were charged to recommend to the board a course of action that would preserve and improve home values. And so that's the direction that we took. That's not to say that some of the others of you might want to pursue looking at alternatives and vetting them and making presentations to the neighborhood. And we would welcome that. I go back to my original premise, though, keep in mind that all becomes a kind of a moot exercise if you don't own the property, because there's nothing that you can do without owning the property, one way or the other, whether it stays a golf course community or not. Next question. Hello, is anybody there?
James is muted.
Sorry.
Oh, James is muted, okay.
There was a follow-on to that question, which was simply, I can't think of any such uses that make sense. So I guess
okay.
She's given it more thought than you have. Let's see, Peter. And I'm not sure which Peter this is. Says the ad hoc committee needs to include more diverse participation beyond just the current makeup that appears to be narrowly focused on just one option. The board should seek out adding HOA members that are more open to fully evaluating alternative approaches.
I think that would we'll bring that question back to the board and to the board chair. Again, got our directions from the board to concentrate on maintaining home values, and that's what we have done. And you know, that's all we can say, I think, about that this evening. Getting this committee to unwieldy is also not a good idea, because nothing gets done. But again, if any of you would like to form your own groups and take a look at other options, nothing would stop you from that. It's just that we are basing our recommendations and determinations, frankly, around 4 years of studying options and evaluating alternatives and talking to people around the country. And this is where we are. John, did you want to add anything to that?
I said this before, like the committee had a wake-up call when Peter Olbaum called me and said, I'm going to get a letter of intent. You know, I realized, I talked to Joanne and Bob immediately, that it left us with no options. Because even if we qualified for the right of first refusal in the contract, we were not in a position to make a counter offer. We were not in a position to go out and get financing in a 30-day window and put up $100,000. And, you know, there is a strong feeling in the community that, you know, having a third party buy the course would be the best solution. And we're concerned about that because of what we've seen at other properties. As for alternative uses, I would say, look, any alternative use that doesn't create our property values, I think we'd be interested in hearing. A lot of the suggestions for alternative uses, well, frankly, what we've heard so far, none of them have a plan behind them. You need to develop a plan. Whoever wants to champion that alternative use, and you know, if the alternative use is pursue litigation, I'll probably sell my home, because I don't want to be in a community that's mired in litigation for the next 5 years, because nothing is going to drive away prospective buyers and real estate brokers faster, you know, than litigation. So I don't see that is a viable option. That was one of like four or five that were presented. But certainly we're not closed to the idea. We just don't have the bandwidth to work it. And we think the option that we've picked is probably the best one.
Hello.
Hi, this is Ken Simone. I want to first say, Joanne, you and your team have done a great job, and you've done your due diligence, and you've represented all of us. Thank you very much. That's number one. And so I'm greatly appreciative.
I'm sorry, Ken. I'm sure that John and Joanne appreciate your positive comment.
Let him continue. Maybe
you might as well let him continue at this point.
Yeah, let's let him continue with second part of his question.
Go ahead, Ken. Oh, sorry. I thought I had unmuted you. Please.
I just want to say thank you again for all the hard work and the due diligence and looking at all of our options. So again, I think it's greatly appreciated. I think you have the interests of all of us in mind. And so again, I just want to say, I appreciate that. I've been an owner for 15, 16 years now, and I've seen us through good and bad.
Okay.
Thank you. I think James is muting me. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No, that wasn't me.
You're still on. No, somebody's there. You are. You're on. Oop, you're off.
Okay. So that's it. I just want to make my comments. And again, I think that we're going in the right direction. And I think, as you've all pointed out, that this is a window of opportunity that we can be proactive rather than reactive. And I think that we're looking a gift horse, you know, in the mouth, and let's take advantage of our hard work.
Thank you.
I just
didn't want to encourage a free for all with the open mic.
No, I understand.
I apologize, Ken, for cutting you off, but there are a lot of people who typed in their chat questions earlier, and I think we should try to read more of those.
Yeah, go ahead.
First one is.
Go ahead.
Only ones that can participate are the guy that sang their praises.
I know it sounded that way.
All right, we knew this was going to happen. I really think it's hard in Zoom, but go ahead, Ken. What's your comment?
Couldn't somebody mute everyone? The host can mute everyone, and then we can go to the chat questions as we planned, and not have the loudest person bully their way in.
Everybody should mute, and I don't know if we can mute everybody on your side.
So I would just offer this. So we had one positive. We know Ken Warners is going to want to, he's been wanting to talk. So let's unmute Carla's mini iPad and hear what he has to say.
Unmute whom?
Carla's mini iPad.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Hello?
I already asked three questions in the chat room.
You have to unmute. Are we looking for a particular person?
Okay, I guess.
What? I'm on. Hello? Hey, please you're going to get a good rate loan.
Please mute
your phone.
How much is
the loan going to be and when is it going to start?
Please mute your phone.
You're getting a loan, right? A 10-year loan?
Correct.
Please mute your phones. Okay, do we have a chat? Another chat?
That was a question. I don't know if you heard it, Joanne, but the question is how much is the loan, right, John?
So okay. I didn't touch on that. We explained it in the, I tried to explain it at least in the package that went out. The purchase price is $1,550,000. The loan is a 10-year self-amortizing loan at 4% interest. It would start, you know, when we close. We could probably close, according to the bank, 2 or 3 months after we vote. So the vote is necessary because the assessments are going to need to stay in place past what we agreed to the last time for the lease. So that's the information on the note.
Okay, thank you. So the next question in the chat is, how long will the assessments stay at their current rate?
So my thought process on this is that we keep the assessments, and I mentioned the bank needs to approve any reductions in assessments, that we keep the assessments at $100 until at least to 2023, maybe 2024, and then reassess it depending upon where we're at. You know, I think, you know, we could have a reduction, but I certainly don't want to make any promises to anybody. So the $100 a month is going to stay for
the time being. Mary Ellen, mute, please.
Well, I just want to know if it's prime plus 3/4 of a point or if
it's 4%.
Should we go into the next question or were you interrupted, John?
No, Let's go ahead.
Now that the pressure to react is off, and I think this is a reference to the offer, how will the board ensure broad participation in the process with opportunity for different voices to be heard?
Well, I think we're doing that. You know, we're having 2 Zoom meetings this week. We're committed to having face-to-face meetings.
So yeah, the next one for sure.
Just tell me if it's a fixed, it's fixed. It's prime plus.
Ma'am, I'm sorry. I've re-answered this question 3 times. It's a 4% loan. 4%. Fixed.
4% interest. Fixed. Okay. We on the question of how we proceed. We are, yes, John said we're having Zooms and we're also looking at the ability to hold in-person town halls, and we'll be able to tell you about that in a very short time. We just have to look into it. We are not interested in hosting super spreader events, but we are interested in getting more of an environment that's a little bit more give and take and communication friendly. So we're with you on this.
We're also going to take all, I started this process, take all the comments, put it into the different categories of comments and answer them. So if you have a question that we haven't answered yet, it will come out. It's going to take a couple of days to accumulate it. I mentioned when I was speaking, we got over 50 communications, so it's kind of overwhelming.
It's
going to take us a little while to put that together.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of repeat questions, so that's why we want to organize them around the same similar topics.
Right.
Next question.
Yes.
What is the price of the purchase if we go to the full length of the lease?
So this is where Peter Olbaum and I disagree. So I have to go back and give you a little bit of history. So back in 2018, you know, we are required to have $200,000 a year of capital each year minimum. Under the terms of the lease. When I first went back to him in 2018 and said, this is what we spent in capital and we bought a mower for $55,000, he said, fine. Now, fast forward to 2021, I said to him, Peter, we spent $481,000 on capital. He's nixing some of it that he doesn't feel is capital. Plus we spent an additional $468,000 on equipment. So we've spent about $900,000. He said, you're not getting credit for the equipment. So the purchase price would reduce. It reduces actually in June, I believe, could go down to $1,250,000 plus $50,000 for the liquor license. He's dead set on getting that money. That's not negotiable. But it only goes down to the extent that we spend over $1 million in capital, and we haven't done that according to his interpretation. I left that issue for the time being because, as I said before, even if we qualified for even if we qualify for a lower price, we need to move on this. You know, waiting to the end in the hopes that maybe we get a little bit of a lower price, I think poses some risks, and we'll probably have to go to arbitration or something about, you know, what's capital or not. And I'm not sure the contract is worded, you know, sort of in his favor, which is understandable since he had like a top, you know, they had a lot of attorneys working on their side. So it's silent about whether equipment is capital. Being a CPA, I just say, if it's not capital, I don't know what it is. Because that's like in the accounting 101 textbook. So it could go down to $1,250,000. It could go down to $1 million, but that would require us to spend $1.5 million on capital. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that we are going to have enough money to do that. And I'm not sure that there's that amount of capital projects to be done, unless he relents on the equipment. Now, mind you, we'll push him on this when the time comes. We'll try to work out a better deal. But at this point, I think the purchase price is going to stay at $1,550,000, unless he's willing to negotiate a little bit.
And the dollar amount, in our mind, I think that's fair to say, isn't great enough to miss the opportunity that we have available to us today with the positive loan environment. Is that safe to say, Jan?
Well, I've said this before on meetings, I'm a CNBC junkie. Grant's Interest Rate Observer is saying it's the best environment to borrow money since 1960. Their interest rates are certainly not going to go down, right? So interest rates can only go one way and up. And so we don't know where they're going to be in 2 years. We don't know in the new administration what's going to happen with taxes, for example, that might cause some issues in the economy that could cause interest rates to go up. We don't know what the Federal Reserve is going to do. So, I don't think in my experience, working with companies for 40 years, I haven't seen a 4% loan in my career. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to do any better than that.
And we know about what he would take now. So having conversations, are you hearing me, Jen?
Yes.
Yeah. We know about what he would take now. And what I'm saying is the difference between waiting and what the price is now, in the grander scheme of things, is not very much.
I mean, the bank actually came back to me and said, how is it possible that you're buying a golf course for $1,550,000?
Right.
Look, I want to make the best deal possible as well, but I do share what Joanne is saying. You have a window of opportunity here to lock in a rate. Okay. What's next, James?
All right.
If we run a golf course, what are the contingencies for unforeseen expenses and or ongoing operating losses?
Well, I think I'm going to explain it this way. One of the reasons we went with a 5-year lease, and one of the reasons that we went with $100 a month as opposed to something less, was to have contingencies so that we could operate the property. So that's built into the $100 a month. $30 is going to debt service. $70 is going to go towards the operations and capital. And let me go back here for 1 second, because I didn't mention this before, but I do want to go back. And I'll just show you. We took on equipment leases in 2019, and you can see that those are all paid off in 2023 because the board decided that we didn't want to have any loans on the books at the termination of the lease. So you can see that in 2024, if these projections hold, and like I said, we think that they're very conservative, we think we're going to do better. In 2024, we don't have any debt service. So that gives us, and the equipment that we got in 2020, come to think of it, but the equipment that we've recently purchased is going to have a much longer useful life than 5 years. I mean, the equipment that was replaced, we had they were working with the original backhoe from 1996, right? So if we could get 20, we're going to get 20 years out of the backhoe. We're not going to have to buy another one. So we think that we're going to have sufficient capital to meet any contingencies. And I do have to say the committee now under Dennis Bishop's direction has been very, very conservative on what to spend. And, you know, sometimes we take a lot of flack for it because residents want to, you know, expand the restaurant and do some other things. And we have, in the time I was on the committee and Dennis has continued and the rest of the people on the committee have been focusing on things that either enhance revenue or fix stuff that's broken. But we'll have more room to do more, certainly after 2023, when we don't have any debt service payments, and that'll give us a chance to build up a reserve to cover contingencies.
Shall we continue?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. If a buyer appears between now and the end of the lease, can that raise the price?
Yes.
Yeah. They won't, you know.
Next question. This person submitted a question previously, probably by email. I trust my question, quote, can homeowners contribute additional capital in order to get a share of future profits and additional golf course privileges? He answered. Can that question be answered? It was not answered in the email.
Well, we're accumulating all the emails as greater than 50. That was one of the questions that, you know, came in. Several that this will be answered in the alternative financing section of our response. The answer is, yeah, anything's possible like that. There's no doubt about it. If an arrangement can be worked out, that, you know, people want to pay in, you know, I mean, this is another thing too. Originally, this course was supposed to be a private equity owned members course. That was the original design. It became a public golf course because they needed cash. They never got to the point, you know, I wasn't living here full time, but there was, I think at one point Silverstein was going to turn it over to the equity owners once they got to a certain point. Of course that never materialized. Is it possible? Yes. I think if people want to champion that and pencil it out and tell us how it's going to work, you know, and what those extra, you know, benefits would be, we're happy to talk about it.
Okay, next question.
I agree with purchasing the golf course, but think we underuse the clubhouse and the restaurant, serving dinner and events, just to mention a few. Parking lot empty by 5. Look at what they do at 49ers. We should use them as a template.
Oh, I'm really, really glad to have this question. first of all, 49ers does have a little bit broader participation among the homeowners and members than Arizona National does. Arizona National's, honestly, participation is probably somewhere around 7-8% on a seasonally adjusted basis of homeowners spend anything near what would be necessary to expand. The part of the reason why the restaurant at the 49ers isn't doing as well as they could financially is they're open too many hours. And so they have people on payroll waiting for people to come in, and then people don't come in. We in the committee dealt with, at the time, Billy Casper, pushed them. Why can't we have more service? And Bernie came back to us and said, people, the servers work on tips. We're busy for like an hour a day. If we have two servers, they make less money. They don't want to come to work. So that's why you see, you know, Rob and Jeff helping out from time to time to keep our labor costs down. We have tried, or should say Indy has tried, a number of different initiatives to end the restaurant operations. None of them have worked. That has been, you know, trivia night, it's been Taco Tuesdays, it's been Mexican Mondays, it's been special events. It's the same number of people, you know, the thing I really enjoy about being at Sabino Springs is you can get to the restaurant in a minute from my house, and I can get home in a minute, and the food is greatly improved, and I get to see all my neighbors and friends and catch up. I don't know why the participation, it's honestly, probably one of the biggest disappointments from the original ad hoc committee, because I was really thinking that the community would support the restaurant to a much larger extent than it does. And so are those things possible? Yes, but understand there's a cost for everything. So, you know, we were joking a little bit before the meeting started, you know, maybe we should make the food free. If we made the assessment like 6 months, the food could be free and we could be open, we could be open 24/7, okay? I'm being facetious, but yeah, the committee and by the way, Indigo is incentivized, you know, they get extra commissions when we turn a profit. So they're incentivized to be profitable as well, as it should be. Because you want a partner, you don't want an operator that's just going to go through the motions. We can certainly look at those things, but you know, candidly, two nights a week is probably all that this community is going to support. And I would be more than happy to talk to, and I'm sure the committee would be more than happy to talk to anybody that has an idea about how to increase participation at the restaurant.
Okay. You are saying that our monthly payment will not go up, which does not seem plausible, but what will the assessment be to buy the property? You have said there will be an assessment. What is that going to be?
So these are repeat questions, but I'll go over it again. So the amortization, the loan costs are going to be $30 a month per homeowner, yeah. Per 516 homeowners. Comes to approximately a little less than $16,000 a month in total. So out of the assessment, $100 assessment, we're going to take $30 and pay off the balance of the note. And we're going to put $70 into our reserve fund to cover contingencies. The reason why this works is we're paying 4%.
Okay, next question. Hello. Okay. I'm sorry for the repeats. I can, it's still difficult for me to keep up with everything all at once.
It's not a problem.
This is another question about leveraging the clubhouse and restaurant and the mentioning of maybe contacting Fox restaurants about opening one of their restaurants, I guess here, like North.
Couple things on that, okay? And this is an ongoing idea, suggestion, and so on. When we first started this process, Bruce Manicki and I worked a lot on the finances, and he was convinced that the best thing to do is just lease that restaurant to an independent operator, and everything would be hunky dory. We had Harvest, which actually closed their restaurant over there on River. Was one target, and we were approached by Trident Grill. Now, I don't particularly like Trident Grill, but there was a lot of excitement about that. And, you know, we started that negotiation, and they said they wanted $200 a month per homeowner minimum paid up front. So that conversation ended, you know, right away. The problem with having a third party operator of the restaurant is twofold. One is we're not doing enough revenue to attract. I mean, we only did like 300 something. Well, in 2019, we did $378,000 worth of revenue. And I think in 2020, it went down by like about $90,000. We don't make money in the restaurant as it is. I mean, we make some gross some contributions, but we don't make money in the restaurant. A restaurant operator is not going to invest funds for a $250,000 in revenue. I mean, that you make that on a food truck. So yes, are we open to ideas on what could be done for the restaurant? Absolutely. But our research and everyone we've spoken to, and I've spoken to general managers in many of the golf courses in the local area, I've spoken to a number of HOAs who have contacted me about advice. And basically, we're a destination golf course, okay? Meaning that, you know, people have to drive a little bit to get here. we back up to the Coronado Mountains. So, you know, so there is that. We're kind of off the beaten path, which people like because it's quiet. The opportunity here, we need the golf course. We need the restaurant to support the golf course because there is a market of golfers that want to eat and they want to have a drink after the round. So we need that. The way we're going to make money in the restaurant is special events. And I mentioned this before. This community with the demographics, you know, and by the way, we're down to 26 renters in the community, which I think is a testament to the success of the lease, because we were up around 70 when we started this process. So that has really helped. But, you know, you have people who are snowbirds. They're only here a few months of the year. You have people that travel in the summer. You know, I'm expecting that Sue and I are going to get out of here for several weeks this summer. There's not enough of a people are on fixed, people on special diets. People only go out to eat. I mean, I had this ding moment when I realized like people only go out to eat once a week and they're not going to the club four times a month. So that's where we're at. Parties, banquets, those are where you make money at a golf course restaurant. And that might be, you know, a capital improvement that has to be considered for the facility in the future in order to enhance revenue and get profitability. But again, I applaud anybody who's got an idea of what to do at the restaurant, but there's been a lot that's been tried and nothing has really stuck.
We're starting to lose a number of our participants, and part of that is because it's the nature of the Zoom environment. Let's take one more chat and then let's answer the rest of the chats through mail. Can you give me another one?
Yes.
James?
Yes, I'm going to cherry pick. Because there is a lot of repetition here. And I think that you may have covered this, John, I'm sorry, in the discussion about the loan, but the question is, will the lending bank require the continued operation of the golf course? The loan is guaranteed by the HOA assessment since the financial projections for the course show losses. I'm not sure if that was clear, but.
And the answer is, I don't know, because we haven't gotten to the underwriting stage yet. So, you know, I've spent a lot of time preparing for this meeting. And we have another meeting on Thursday. So I don't know if they're going to require it, but I would say that the lien is on the assessments. So I would say that they would be amenable. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be amenable if we say to them, hey, listen, we're not going to operate this golf course anymore. And they're going to say, fine, keep paying us the $30 a month per person to pay it off, you know.
Right. Okay. So I guess when all is said and done, even though this seems like a pretty complex issue, it really comes down to whether or not you as homeowners believe that we should buy this course before the end of the lease for all the reasons we stated, to control our own destiny, or you don't. You don't think that's the case. And again, we will have many more sessions to talk through this, but that's really the bottom line. Do we believe that this is in our best interest, take advantage of the market the way it is today, and move forward prior to the end of the lease? We're not talking about next week or in 3 weeks, but before the end of the lease, or don't we? What we'd like to do, as we did in the previous meetings that we had, is get kind of a straw poll from the people who have attended as to where they are on this issue. And we will do this at every meeting, and we will do it, the questions that are submitted to us, and ask the participants to also take this straw poll and just get a sense of where we are and you know what our plans ought to be. So this evening, we'd like to ask you to participate in this. It may be premature, but just to see where people's heads are at today. So Gordon, if you wouldn't mind putting up the poll and we'll have people respond. And really the question is, do you wish to purchase this course prior to the end of the lease and take advantage of controlling our own destiny with the favorable banking arrangements we can get, or not? And that's what this means. Are you currently in favor of purchasing the golf course? What's missing there is prior to the end of the lease. Please respond either yes or no if you choose to take part in the straw poll. Again, it's just a straw poll. We did this many times over the course of the first go around when we developed the lease option, and that helped us understand where the neighborhood was coming from.
We just need to let everybody know that there's a poll being displayed on screen, and we'd like you to respond using that
right
method, because some people are putting their responses in the chat, and that's fine.
Chat. No. You should be all looking at a screen that says, are you currently in favor of purchasing the golf course? And that means sooner rather than later, either yes or no.
And, you know, while people are doing that, Joanna, I did just see a question, and this is out of order, but the question is, would it be possible to, when you get enough of these answers to these questions in written form beyond what's already been sent out, can they be posted on the website? Is that something?
Yeah, I mentioned this a couple times already. We're gonna respond to all the questions. We're gonna post all the comments, and how that works, James, we'll work it out with you and Donna on how to do that, whether we email it or whether we put it on the website or whatever.
Okay. If you are different homeowners watching on the same computer, you can send your, not, I wouldn't do it in the chat, but you can send us an email and let us know. And also we'll be, as Joanne said, we'll be doing this at each of the meetings and whenever we have the opportunity to interact with you by email or whatever. So we'll try to sort them out so that we're not counting people twice. So just identify yourself and let us know, and that will be factored in. This right. isn't a vote, this is just.
No, it's just a straw poll. It would be helpful if it was one vote, one household.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Yeah, so that means just one person can vote if you're three people.
Right.
Is there a way for people who have called in and are not on their computers to participate in the poll?
Yes, you can respond. Your answer you can send to James.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see a spreadsheet in our future.
I bet you do.
Joanne, this is Gordon. Yes. I think we've finished out with the poll. There are 75 out of 88.
Yeah. Okay, great. Great. So again, I can't thank you enough for participating, taking your time to look at this important issue in our future. I would like to personally thank John Green and Dennis Bishop, who heads up the golf committee, and James and Gordon tonight for handling the meeting for us. Thank you very much for all of your work.
And I want to thank James for getting the packages out. He really did yeoman's work on this.
In short time.
Sending out at 8:45 on a Friday night. I thought that was a great service to this community. And I also want to thank you for sending all the communications around that's come in over the past week and a half or so. And like I said, it's been overwhelming. And thank you all for attending.
Would you be so bold as to show the preliminary poll results?
what we'd like to do is, as I said, a number of people left the meeting. We know who they are, however. We would like to get the two Zoom meetings in back of us and the people who were not able to attend, who are not very happy that they couldn't attend because they either don't have a computer in their house or whatever. I'd like to get that by at least this week and then share the results.
That's fair. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was Thank both of you for your work.
Thank you.
Very much appreciated.
Yes, great job, especially compiling the financials. Thank you.
Can I say something?
Certainly.
There was apparently 100 participants limit, and we tried to get in at 5 of 5 and could not get in. And we were all allowed to get in when other people dropped out. And 100 people, participants, is not enough for this HOA. Yes. And there's a way to fix that, but I'm not sure how.
There is. I think we thought it was fixed, but apparently it was not.
And actually, I think during this very meeting, we have successfully upgraded the account so that we can accommodate a greater number. We did hit over 100 after we did that, just this evening after we started. And I do apologize for that. So we will post the recording of this meeting on the website as soon as we can. There'll be another meeting on Thursday night, which will also be recorded. But on Thursday night, we should not have that problem. We should be able to accommodate, instead of 100 people, hundreds of people. And hopefully that will be sufficient for all who wish to participate on Thursday evening.
Okay, thanks.
And by the way, I don't know if we completed that sentence, but the straw poll is intended to be, it is anonymous. There's no tracking of who is voting which way.
Thursday's meeting is a repeat of this?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if you should say it's a repeat, but are you going to cover all the same material, do you think?
Well, tonight was the dress rehearsal and Thursday night's the main opening act. No, we're gonna cover the exact same material.
Okay.
I'll try to talk less though.
The chat questions will undoubtedly be different and the same.
Yes.
So you think we're at the end, Joanne?
I think we're at the end. I think a lot of people I see are leaving. So again, thank you all, and thank you, my fellow committee members, and we look forward to seeing you guys at least back on Thursday.